Warning. This product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Vuse is smooth, consistent, and intentionally simple. It's vapor done right. Because when you're free to focus on what really matters, everything just clicks. Find Vuse, that's V-U-S-E, Vuse, at your favorite convenience store.
Underage sale prohibited. Vuse is a vapor product. Website restricted to age 21 plus tobacco consumers. Copyright 2026 RJRVC.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
This is History's Hidden Killers. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
All right.
BTK, Dennis Rader, the Wichita church guy, the Cub Scout leader who got himself caught in 2005 because he asked the cops in writing if a floppy disk could be traced. You know him. What you've been told about him for the last 20 years is that he was a force of nature, a criminal mastermind in a city. Compliance uniform driven by something he called Factor X. The story has been on every documentary about him since 1978, when the first typed letters and the words Factor X went to a local television station in Wichita, Kansas. It's been printed in every book. It's been repeated in every podcast. It has been more or less unchallenged. The version, this mythical criminal mastermind for almost 50 years. And the problem with that story of the mastermind, the reason I want to spend five episodes taking it apart this week, starting with this one, is that Dennis Rader, he's the one who came up with Factor X. He coined the phrase. He coined his own nickname. He mailed letters to the Wichita Eagle and Cake TV for 30 years, telling them what frame to use, what name to use, what kind of killer to make him into. He wrote his own narrative. The mythology of BTK is the mythology Dennis Rader composed about Dennis Rader, sitting at a typewriter in his own kitchen while his wife slept down the hall. And we bought it. The press bought it. The cops who finally caught him had spent decades fighting a man who had also been the chief author of their official theory of him. This is the first conversation we're having in this series of five. And I want you to give me your thoughts on this story and the angles that we're going down, the lanes we're going to explore here in the BTK story, in the comment section on our Substack and YouTube. The links are in the description. So this first conversation, what I want to do is set his version of this story down and pick up the actual file. Because once you read what's in the actual file, the whole legend stops looking like a story about a force of evil and starts looking like what it always was, a vain man's marketing plan. Now, it's really what it comes down to. The next four episodes and this one are going to be about the chase. The cops never quite closed in on him on in the 70s and 80s. The costumes, the day jobs, the church positions, the Cub Scout pack that made him invisible. The 13-year silence between his last confirmed kill in 1991 and his resurfacing in 2004. In the moment in early 2005 when he caught himself with a floppy disk, he was vain enough to send to a TV station. But before we get to any of that, you need to understand the room he wrote his own legend in, because everything that comes after The chase, the costumes, the silence, the catch, all of it makes more sense once you've taken his version of himself apart. So February 10th, 1978, Park City, Kansas, it's a suburb that's just north of Wichita. I actually used to live there for a short period of time. Well, about 10 years, really. Dennis Rader is sitting at his typewriter in his own kitchen. He's 32 years old. He has a wife named Paula. He has a young son named Brian. He's enrolled at Wichita State University, working towards a degree. And sit with this for a second. And the administration of justice, that's what he's studying. By day, he's an alarm installer for ADT Security Systems in Wichita. He drives a marked van. He has business cards. The people whose houses he services believe he's making them safer. It's funny. When I first moved to the Wichita area around 2006, BTK had just been caught. But one of the first things I did, and I didn't know a lot about the BTK story other than the surface information, was I got an alarm system, an ADT alarm system, put into my house in Park City, Kansas. It's kind of crazy. It's funny. There's a lot that converges on this city of Park City. There's actually one of our contributors on our show here, Jennifer Coffendaffer, a retired FBI special agent. She's from Park City too. I mean, and never crossed paths there years ago. But it's amazing the amount of people who came out of this little tiny town. I mean, it's like a village almost, just north of Wichita. It's an interesting place. He's killed seven people by this point. Four members of the Otero family in their own house in January 1974. Catherine Bright, 21 years old. In April of that same year, Shirley Vane in March of 1977 with her three children home in the next room and surviving Nancy Fox in her duplex 3 weeks before Christmas of 1977. The Wichita police have a composite sketch based on the survivor's description. They have a typewritten letter hidden in a library book in October of 1974, in which he confessed to the Oteros and named himself BTK for the first time. They don't have his name. And that night, in his own kitchen, while his wife and son are in the house with him, Dennis Rader sits down at his typewriter and writes a letter to KAKE-TV. In Wichita, they just call it Cake TV. I know, nothing says news you can trust like cake. I know. I thought it was weird too. The letter is the moment Wichita finally gets the brand BTK wanted on the local news. It's also the moment Dennis Rader, in his own typing, hands the press the explanation he once used for him going forward. The letter names what he says is wrong with him. He calls it the Factor X. He says the same force was in other killers, and he lists them by name. Ted Bundy, the Hillside Strangler, the Son of Sam, Jack the Ripper. Puts himself in the category with all these people. He picks out a menu of nicknames the press could use for him and asks them to choose. Which one would you guys like? Survey says the Wichita Hangman? The Wichita Executioner? The Garrett, the Gratiot Phantom? The Bondage Strangler? And then he tells them his own preferred initials, BTK, Bind, Torture, Kill. Ding, ding, ding. Survey says, and the press obliges. The local newspaper, the Wichita Eagle, prints it, Cake prints it. From that day forward, the public eye, when looking at this man who they cannot actually name, now have a name, or at least a nickname. Three letters, BTK. And he is BTK for the next 27 years, mailing in his own follow-ups, his own poems, his own taunts, his own anniversary cards, all of them signed with the brand he chose for himself. But the part of the letter that matters more than the name and those nicknames is Factor X. Because Factor X is the thing he wants you to believe explains him. It what makes him deep.
and not just some neurotic maniac. It's got the Factor X. Did you catch the Factor X? I got the Factor X. The pitch is that there's a force inside of him, that something dark and inhuman lives in him, that he didn't choose this, the force did. And for almost 50 years, more or less unchallenged, that has been the explanation the documentaries have run with. Because, look, it makes for a more dramatic special than the boring truth, which is that he was a vain man who liked doing this and was good at hiding it. That's what I find amazing about the Factor X story. Dennis Rader's actual childhood does not match the standard profile for the kind of man we used to think Factor X meant. You know the profile: abuse at home, bedwetting, fire setting, animal cruelty, a broken family, poverty, failure at school. Some of all of it. That's the formula. I mean, every true crime documentary leans on when they want to explain a serial killer in the first 8 minutes. Well, let's look at the childhood. He liked to kill small animals. He did this, this happened. There was a, Dennis Rader's childhood was not that. Dennis Rader grew up in a stable home in Wichita with two married parents who were both alive and both present. Yeah, he was the oldest of four boys. His mother worked in retail. His father had served in the military and was working at Kansas Gas and Electric. He played sports. He went to church at a Lutheran congregation of the same denomination he'd one day be the council president of for years. He had friends by every public account. His childhood was unremarkable. It was normal, I guess, so to speak. There wasn't a lot of chaos going on in it that one would expect. So it seems Dennis found a way to create the chaos that wasn't around him. The textbook explanation for how a man becomes the man Dennis Rader became does not apply to Dennis Rader. He did, by his own admission to Dr. Catherine Ramsland decades later, do one thing in childhood that fits the profile. He killed small animals. Hanged rabbits and stray cats from the rafters of his grandmother's barn, alone, without being asked, without being encouraged. Because who goes and asks you to do that sort of thing? And the thing about that detail, the thing that the standard Factor X narrative wants to fold up neatly and call a symptom is that cat killing wasn't a symptom. The cat killing was practice. Dennis Rader was doing what he wanted to do at age 12. He kept doing what he wanted to do at age 16. He started doing it to people at age 28. The continuity isn't a force overtaking him over the years. The continuity is him. Factor X doesn't greet him after playing with a Ouija board or some bullshit like that. This is who Dennis was from a very early age. He liked to control and torture things. Now, Dennis Rader, through his teens and 20s, kept what he himself called study material, magazines, crime articles, drawings he made of female classmates in bondage, notes on the schedules of female teachers leaving school in the afternoon. He built a private inventory of his own fantasies that he was updating for more than a decade before he ever killed anybody. That's not a man being possessed by something external. That is a man building a portfolio. He had a name for the part of himself that did all this beyond Factor X. Called it the Minotaur, a half-man, half-bull monster from Greek mythology. He wrote that the Minotaur lived in the labyrinth, and that the labyrinth was built so nobody could find him, and that the Minotaur waited there hungry until it was time to emerge and feed. That's his metaphor. And if every documentary about him uses it, because it sounds psychiatric, psychotic, I don't know. Jungian? I don't know. It sounds like This is a man wrestling with something deep and ancient and primal that he can't control, and it makes it sound more spooky. It sounds like bullshit. Minotaur is not a clinical term. A Minotaur is a brand. Dennis Rader was a self-styled mythology buff who picked the most dramatic-sounding monster he could associate with himself. He could have picked anything. He picked a Minotaur because that made him sound like he was a prisoner in a cosmic labyrinth that wasn't really his fault. The Minotaur is the same trick Factor X's. It externalizes the thing. Dr. Catherine Ramsland is the forensic psychologist who corresponded with Dennis Rader from prison for more than a decade and wrote a book about him in 2016. She's been on this show. We've talked to her about Dennis Rader a few times. You can go back and find it in the archives. She probably has more inside view of this man than any living human being who isn't on his Christmas card list. And her actual conclusion, the one buried under all the Factor X coverage and the cable specials, is that Rader had three things going on. He had narcissistic personality disorder, formally diagnosed by the court psychiatrist at his trial. He had an organized methodology refined over decades of practice. And he had what Ramsland called a hunger for fame that, by his own confession to her, was the actual engine, not a demon, a diagnosis, and a need to be talked about. Dr. James Allen Fox is a criminologist at Northeastern University who has studied serial killers as a career. And in 2005, the New York Times asked him about Dennis Rader's Factor X explanation. He didn't write a paper. He didn't issue a careful press release. He just said one word, poppycock. That word, said by an academic in the national newspaper of record, was as close to the mainstream press got in the entire BTK era to telling you what I'm telling you right now. It's all bullshit. Which is that Factor X was a lie. Dennis Rader was not possessed. He was a man with a diagnosable mental health condition and a confessed hunger for fame. He used his vacation time to kill people. He used his ADT route to scope houses. He used his Cub Scout uniform to look like the kind of guy you'd trust your kids with. He used his church council seat to look like the kind of layperson nobody would imagine as the man Wichita PD was hunting. He was, and this is the hard part, the most boring possible explanation for himself, a vain man who got off on control and on a attention, who knew how to hide, and who built his cover story carefully enough that we all read it. The reason all this matters and the reason this series exists at all is that for almost 50 years, the BTK story has been told in his frame. Factor X, the Minotaur, the BTK killer, the compulsion, the architecture, the legend, every part of that frame was composed by him for him to make him sound more interesting than he actually was. He wasn't more interesting than he was. He was a man who killed 10 people because he wanted to kill 10 people. He killed them in homes he had legal access to from his job or had cased on his own time. He killed them with knots he learned in scouting and kept teaching to other people's kids while he was killing. He killed them while holding down a marriage, a security installation job, a church council seat, a Cub Scout pack, and eventually a city compliance officer badge at Park City, Kansas. And in the dead time between killings, he sat at a kitchen typewriter and wrote letters to the press telling them how to think about him. This series exists to take it back. Not because Dennis Rader matters more than the people he killed. He doesn't. Because the people he killed matter enough that the man who killed them shouldn't get to write the title of their story. In our next part, the chase that didn't close. Every piece of evidence the cops actually had on Dennis Rader through the 70s and 80s, it's mind-blowing. Every miss, every wrong man chased instead, and the 18 years. One real husband named Bill Wergel had to live as the suspect in his own wife's murder. Until Dennis Rader. In 2004, in his own vanity, mailed her stolen driver's license to the local paper and freed him by accident. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue to work through the story of BTK. There's a lot to come on Dennis. We'll continue our conversation in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. The links are in the description. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.